Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On this program, I have Elizabeth Akivrak. Elizabeth is from Uktiarvik, Alaska, also known as Barrow. She is Inupiaq and Mexican. Elizabeth is a nonprofit accountant and teaches self-defense for Missing and Murdered No More. Elizabeth is also an artist who owns The Naughty Bead on Instagram. On top of doing all that, she is a full-time student at Penn State University, majoring in energy and sustainability policy. And on this show, Elizabeth courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Elizabeth Akivrak. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm pretty good.
Well, I really wanted to thank you because, like I said earlier, I was just either saw one of your TikToks or one of your posts about sobriety. And whenever I see somebody posting on social media, I like jump at the chance and ask them if they want to tell their story. And sometimes they're ready and sometimes they're not. Hey, so our listeners can get to know you. Can you go ahead and please introduce yourself?
Yeah. Uvlulotak uvanga akpaluk tanisiniga Elizabeth akivat koya urunga utkerving mi urunga pangmapak kisarving mi inurunga tamna denaina nuna anga yukaka ethel akivga lu Fernando Ortega lu Rosemary Habish lu Eben Hopchin Jr. lu. My name is Elizabeth Akivgak. My Inupiaq name is Akpaluk. I am from Barrow, but I now reside in Anchorage on Denaina land. My parents are Ethel Akivgak, Fernando Ortega, but I pay respect to my foster parents who raised me, Rosemary Habish and Eben Hopson Jr. I am Inupiaq and Mexican, so that makes me full indigenous. And I'm lucky enough to be a nonprofit accountant and teach self-defense through a company called Missing and Murdered No More. I also own The Naughty Bead on Instagram, where I make earrings. That was a part of my sobriety journey. I am a full-time student at Penn State, majoring in energy and sustainability policy. I graduate next August if everything goes as planned.
Tell us more about Missing and Murdered No More. I mean, you teach self-defense?
Yeah, so I just got my self-defense training certification from RIP Aggression Defense Systems. They are a leading self-defense training certification company, and I trained along a lot of law enforcement down in Texas for a couple of days before receiving the certification with them. And they are they are members of some national certification agencies or associations for self-defense. So I think that's why I sort of gravitated towards their program. It was kind of difficult trying to break into self-defense, but it's something that is, it's a prevalent issue in our community. So I thought, you know, it'd be great if we saw some indigenous representation in that arena.
Dang, don't mess with you. And that's cool that you're, you know, showing the indigenous people that they can take this self-defense class with you, too. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And Nadi Bead, and you said that was part of your sobriety journey. How so?
Well, when I got restless, I needed something to do. I just felt this like restlessness when I quit drinking, and I needed to fill that void with something. So I turned to beading, and like I bead these little Inuk faces, and I bead some ivory too. I think that was a really good way to spend my time and really sort of reflect. I've slowed down a little bit because of school starting up, but I know I'll return to it this winter once I'm sort of stuck in the house.
And people could purchase your creative creations from Nadi Bead on Instagram?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's some. It's spelled like knot, N-A-N, or K-N-O-T-T-Y, so like Nadi Bead. It was just something I sort of started up. I had previously been off of social media for a year. I took a year hiatus. And when I returned, that's when I sort of started the beading thing.
Dang, a year off. I don't think I could ever do that. Hey, can you tell everybody what things looked like before you got sober?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Before I got sober, I was pretty troubled. I struggled a lot with undiagnosed bipolar disorder and PTSD and institutionalization. My PTSD therapist actually warned me that if I were to continue with substance abuse, I use marijuana, I could experience a psychotic break, and I did. I had my first manic episode in 2021, and it landed me in API for a month and a half. And that didn't necessarily stop me from drinking, though. I hadn't had enough of the hangovers and the high-risk behavior until I was sick of going to jail. It took my DUI to straighten me out. My legal troubles were pretty humiliating. There's a saying that goes around in sober circles, and you've probably heard of this before, but I'm allergic to alcohol. When I take it, I break out in handcuffs, and
yeah.
And that's been my experience. I lost my higher executive function for planning and reasoning and problem solving. And I suppressed my higher executive function, affecting my attention control, inhibitory control. I don't know, I literally destroyed my home. I destroyed my networks and my reputation. It kind of got pretty bad. I worked down in Juneau as a legislative aide, and shortly after I relapsed. There I was so preoccupied with wanting to be liked that I drank to the point that people didn't actually like me, and as a result, no one hired me back. Someone actually mentioned over a petroleum fiscal policy training that drinking was a career limiting opportunity, and that sort of resonated with me, and I believe it.
Man, that I had so many similarities with your story. I mean, when you mentioned career limiting, I think I'm a dental assistant, right?
Yeah.
That's my day job is dental assisting. I probably worked for half of the dental offices here in Anchorage. It's funny because we could laugh about it now, but during the time, it's just like, oh my God, you know, another one. It's because it was directly linked to my drinking, because I'm working at a great dental office now, and they've hired me back a couple times. They're honestly one of the best people that I've worked for, because they saw that I was a really good assistant, you know, when I was sober, when I was, you know, there and present. I didn't have any issues with anybody else, you know, for the most part. I work good. But what they said, when I drank, I would not show up, you know?
Yeah.
I would be like, I would disappear for a week or whatever, you know. When you mentioned that, it I was like, yeah, that was me. Oh my gosh, I've had 3 DUIs, so I'm a felon, mm-hmm. you know. So I know that experience of being in jail and being allergic to alcohol, breaking out in handcuffs, like you said. I had to laugh because it was like, that's me.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But you know, all of these hardships that we've went through, we can do what we're doing now and show people that, you know, you can live a better life. You know, you even though that thing has happened to you in the past,
yeah,
that's not us now.
Yeah,
you know.
And that's something that's really hard to convince other people of, is that you're making a concerted effort for change, and it takes so much more longer to repair the damages and repair relationships after you've lost people's trust. Mm-hmm. And garnering that support it can be difficult, but I think if you're consistent and you stay consistent and patient, things eventually turn up and change. At least I hope so, and I hope things change for the better. Things are great now. I'm taking care of everything that I need to, and I'm appreciative of where I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And things do get better. It seems like at the time that it's the hardest thing in the world to do, you know, but you just got to keep going. Life is life, you know. Life is ups and downs. But you can deal with those types of hardships in life even when you're sober. You don't have to have a drink to deal with it like I used to think I had to do, you
yeah.
know. Every little hardship I had, I would, oh man, I need a drink.
Yeah.
You know. What inspired you to become sober?
So I think the first thing that inspires me to be sober is my family. I want to get back to them. I've estranged myself as an alcoholic. And through my mental illness. In fact, I've defined myself as these things, and that's not the way you want to build up your self-esteem. Another thing that inspired me to become sober was that I was so sick and tired of institutionalization. I never wanted to go back to API. It's my biggest fear, and now that I've managed that through medication that's not compatible with alcohol, I also don't want to go back to jail. So my fear of those things inspired me to actually change. And with the right support, I've had an incredibly supportive workplace over the last year that, you know, I have been able to make these changes.
Yeah, was the process difficult?
The process was difficult. It wasn't my first rodeo. My former foster mother was a healthcare director, so she wanted me to attend residential treatment down in Washington when I was 19. And my home government had a scholarship program for treatment. I wish, you know, that kind of scholarship program for treatment was available to all regions of Alaska. Unfortunately, I don't know if those kinds of things are instituted elsewhere, but I was able to attend 2 other outpatient treatment programs, and the most recent one was at Providence Breakthrough, which was recommended by my lawyer. Aside from institutionalization, I've struggled with the fear of missing out, which is probably the most difficult process, was accepting that I'm not who I want to be when I'm drinking. That and dealing with the aftermath, the consequences of my actions. I won't be able to get my license back until January. Luckily, I have an incredibly gracious network, though, that, you know, supports my general direction.
Mm-hmm. Man, that fear of missing out, the FOMO, oh my gosh, that is so true. Because I always thought, man, now that I'm not drinking, I'm never going to have fun again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, or, you know, going on vacation, I'm going on a vacation this next month with my biological father. He's getting married down in Mexico, and it's, you know, going to be the tequila capital of the world. And so I've traveled through Europe before, and I've been able to maintain sobriety, so I think I got this down, but I definitely will be envious of everyone else that gets to enjoy everything that I don't.
Yeah, that's, you know, when I went, the first time I went to Vegas last year was when I was newly, you know, when I was sober, Vegas sober. So I had to have, like, you know, sober support definitely there, or else I know I would have probably misstepped somewhere, you know what I mean? And I just got back from Vegas too, not too long ago, and I saw the Chili Peppers.
Cool.
And I was able to remember, you
yeah.
know? I was able to remember the concert and how freaking amazing it was. I saw them before once, before in Portland, and I can't remember half of the concert, to tell you the truth, because I was so hammered.
Yeah.
You think you're having more fun than you really are, and when you experience things sober, like, you know, all the shows in Vegas, or, you know, all the concerts, whatnot, sights and sounds and smells, it's different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that watching shows has definitely been more gratifying once you remember, or now that you can remember the highlights of it and the experiences. Yeah, good for you, though. I'm glad that you got to check them out while you're down there.
What were the biggest challenges for you?
Well, my biggest challenges were finding ways to replace an addiction with new hobbies. In the summertime, I get out as much as I can, fishing, camping, hiking, that sort of thing. And in the wintertime, I bead and ski, but most importantly, I manage a school schedule on top of my full-time job. The other thing was learning how to socialize sober. I'm pretty introverted, and learning how to talk with people without a social lubricant was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I've mentioned, you know, just piecing my life back together has been a challenge, but I've been pretty resilient in overcoming those things. The only thing is, I need to actually treat them like real consequences, and consider that fact, instead of treating them like hoops to jump through, because they're not hoops, they're real life issues.
Yeah. Dealing with life, you know. A lot of people run away and try to hide their emotions and the feelings by either using drugs or alcohol, you know.
Yeah.
Why is sobriety so important to you?
Sobriety is so important to me because it's a matter of life worth living. I have some lofty goals. I want to go to graduate school. I want to go to law school. And I don't think that those things are, I don't think I can accomplish those things if I were to drink. I mean, I don't even know if I can accomplish those things if I don't drink. I try to maintain dreams as goals so that they aren't prone to being pipeline dreams. One of the things that my mom once said was that dreams are just goals without a plan. So, but yeah, that's why sobriety is so important to me, is just because I do want to be a part of my community, and that's where that is based in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being part of, like, the community and having connection with other people and different communities itself. Like today I went to the suicide prevention walk, you know, and there are so many people there. I mean I had an idea, but just seeing all those people there supporting you know, suicide prevention, either by being something happening, experiencing through other people or maybe themselves, you know, because suicide prevention or suicide awareness is really I'm really big advocate for that, you know.
Yeah.
And that was part of my story, and I'm sure it's part of a lot of people's story, because alcohol and mental health and like suicide, they're all interrelated,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
A lot of people try to like compartmentalize all these different issues, but they're all interrelated, and people need to step back and realize that, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's a part of my story, but I don't really consciously consider it a part of my story. I think I do try to compartmentalize it as something that didn't happen. I don't know why that is. I don't acknowledge it, and it's not something that I actively talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that did affect me in my early 20s. This isn't like it's obviously not an easy thing to talk about, but it is something that should be talked about, because once you get through those periods and you look back, it's so worth it to go on through life and accomplish the things that you want to, and look back and realize, like, I didn't take my life, and mm-hmm. it was worthwhile. I think, you know, self-actualization on Maslow's hierarchy of needs is something that we don't tend to often enough, so we feel unfulfilling. And mm-hmm. I'm not talking about huge goals, like, everyone obviously doesn't need to go to school. There are trade programs that are available and certifications that people can get. Those are meaningful things in people's lives, and reaching that whatever goal that you may have is just important to sort of important for yourself. It's tending to self-care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, self-care is huge. I just wanted to say thank you for even opening up about that. I know it's a tough thing to do, and for a lot of people, it's something that will never be brought up, you know, in their whole lifetimes. And it took me a whole long time to be able to even mention it or even think about it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to think about it for the longest time, you know, because when I attempted suicide, it was, of course, when I was drinking, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And
you feel sort of a sense of shame in,
yeah.
Like, I did that. I mm-hmm. could have hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. And that shame is the whole reason this whole stigma exists of, you know, recovery, sobriety, mental health, you know? It's a shame that really, really hurts people. People have such, like, they can't let it go, and it's so hard to do, and they don't know how to do it. And by even you being on my program, you're giving people, like, the hope that they need to even think about this kind of stuff. And I really want to thank you, you know,
yeah.
for opening up like that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
What does your sobriety, what does it look like now? How are you living your sobriety?
What my sobriety looks like now, my recovery looks pretty boring, actually. That's probably because recovery isn't all sunshines and rainbows. I didn't get my condo and pay off my car overnight. Those things took years of consistency. But I go to work every day, I tend to my online courses, I get outdoors as much as possible. I bead when I'm able to. Beading really helped me fill that void for a while there until school took precedence. But I think what I appreciate most about what my sobriety looks like now is just the outdoor experience. I think it's called outdoor therapy, but
yes.
Yeah.
Let's see, what piece of advice would you give to somebody that is new to recovery?
I would like to say that it's never too late to get sober. Sometimes getting sober takes a couple of tries. Sobriety takes a lot of tries. It doesn't matter how many times you have to try, just keep it up. It gets better and easier. Life falls into place, and while it's not always easy, there are always resources that can help you. South Central Foundation has, at the Alaska Native Medical Center, not only has a treatment program, but they also have groups that help you navigate things. I think that they even have some anger management resources available. I was able to get my PTSD therapy for free because my therapist operated like a cooperative. I think that kind of model should be implemented into policy and expand mental health resources. But that's sort of going beyond what kind of resources are currently available. But look out for them wherever you can. If sobriety is on your mind and you see opportunities on the radio or anywhere, take the chance.
Yeah. Yeah, South Central and ANTHC, they have some good programs too.
Yeah, and I think I heard of Rainforest Recovery down in Southeast Alaska too. They have a state facility.
Oh, cool, cool. Yeah, and I went to CIT's residential program, or the Ernie Turner program. They have a really nice building out there in Eklutna.
I heard about that program.
Yeah, and it's cool because it's a cultural peer support specialist, which is very cool.
Yeah.
To, you know, bring the culture into it as well.
Yeah. I've had some friends that went down to an all-Native treatment program down in Arizona, and I think it was called Sunrise or something to the tune of Sunrise Recovery Programs or something like that. But, yeah, there are resources like that available. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. I really appreciate you coming on and having the courage to, you know, share your story and bring out things that people need to hear. And I know your story and what you're sharing is going to bring hope to somebody out there. So, man, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Ki tavra.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project, Saturdays at 3 p.m., Sundays at 8 p.m. on KSKO, serving the western interior of Alaska for more than four decades. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.